This is Storage Unpacked. Subscribe at storageunpacked.com.
This is Chris Evans with another Storage Unpacked podcast, and I'm here with Martin. How are you doing, Martin?
Yeah, not too bad. It's a lovely sunny day today. We've had a bit of a mixed summer. Well, obviously, we've had some decent temperatures, but now it's sunny down here in London. What's it like for you?
Yeah, sunny here too. I mean, you're right. We had a bit of a weird heat wave, didn't we, earlier in the year? Yeah. And then it sort of went wet, and now it sort of balanced out into somewhere in between. But, you know, we're in the summer. It's nice to be, you know, outside and barbecuing in the garden, things like that. So it's good.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, now, it's just you and me, so we're just going to pick something and rip it to pieces this week, see how far we get. And the conversation for this week really is tied to something that a few things we've seen come out on Blocks and Files. Thank you very much, Chris, for being the one who produces all this stuff that we then can talk about. Chris had something else that he'd taken from somebody else's content, and that was to look at storage unicorns, and a unicorn being a company that is allegedly worth $1 billion. Now, there's a list there that I look at and think, really? And some I think, yeah, okay. And it just made me wonder, what do we really class as a unicorn in terms of, we know it's a $1 billion company, but does that mean revenue? Is that value? Is that, what is it? And really, is it justified? And should we even be thinking about that? And does it mean that we're missing out on other companies we could know? So that's our conversation today, to sort of rip apart the concept of whether the idea of a storage unicorn is of any value whatsoever.
Yeah, I think so. It's the list which Chris has picked up is from January 2020. Coldigo, is that how you pronounce it?
I think Coldargo, perhaps.
Or Coldargo, yeah, could be.
I would get, you could, yeah, it's one of those words, a bit like Storagio and Storage IO, and you could Minio, you can pronounce how you like, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's got this list. There's some interesting names on the list, as you said, and there's maybe a couple of names which we would expect to see on the list.
Let's start from the very top then. I think when you look at this list, and I'm going to rattle off a few names. In fact, shall I rattle them all off, and then at least then we've got the list, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes. We've got Acronis, Activio, Barracuda, Cohesity, Datrium, DDN, Druva, Infinidat. And now Kasia, is it Kasia, do you think?
I don't know.
How you pronounce it? Kasia? Kaseya? Yeah. I like Kaseya, actually. That sounds quite good.
Nasuni,
Cumulo, Rubrik, Vast Data, Veeam Software, Veritas Technologies. Lots of companies on there that are quite interesting. But are they all what you would class as a unicorn? Now, I imagine the unicorn term is valued at greater than $1 billion. And I think part of this list came about because Cumulo raised money, was it last week or this week, 125 million valuation of something like 1.2 billion. And therefore they're now in the unicorn category, around a sort of 5-to-6-1 ratio they seem to pick based on your funding and what they think you're worth. Now, does that seem reasonable?
I don't know. I mean, so we chatted to it about this before we start, because we do actually have a conversation to talk about where we're going when we record podcasts. It's not all entirely random, folks.
Yep.
And a unicorn is a unicorn because somebody's actually decided to call them a unicorn. I mean, you're not worth $1 billion until somebody's paid $1 billion for you. Do I see anybody paying $1 billion for some of these companies? I'm not sure. But then again, some of the companies on the list, you look at it, there's one which is on the list, which is Datrium. We don't know how much was paid for it, but somebody paid money for it. And I'm not sure we would have valued it at $1 billion before we had this conversation.
Yeah, bless them. I mean, Datrium, they didn't talk about the acquisition cost. We probably think it was a distressed sale because the actual acquisition value wasn't quoted. I remember chatting to a few people online and looking around, and a number of around 600 million might have been bandied about. But, you know, is that accurate? Who knows? We just don't know, do we? But that isn't a billion. It's not even close. So, you know, that number's, I think, a bit open to interpretation. Now, from my experience in the way that VCs look at how they value companies and how they come out with a number, I think that what they do is they start off zero. You know, you're not worth anything, are you? You put money in and you can only be worth the value of the money that's in the company at the time before you start spending it. But at that point, obviously, you're acquiring some sort of value that somebody might want. And I think every time you have a funding round, they look at it and say, do we think the company is now worth more than it was? Have they developed some useful IP? Have they got something of value that they could sell to a customer? How far down that route are they? And if they're still in research, then they're not worth anything. If they way down the line where they're shipping product, perhaps they are worth something. So that 5 to 6 times multiple number might be a bit, you know, we might be able to challenge that, but it seems to be where the market seems to get after about 4 or 5 rounds of funding.
And we know that that's what the VCs, that's what they want. That's their minimal return anyway. They want that large return on the money they put in, because they do expect to make money on some, but they also do expect some to fail.
Agreed. Now, that could be an interesting angle, couldn't it? That they're literally putting a number out there because they think, well, if we start saying that's what the number is, that's what people think they might be prepared to pay for it. Talk enough about a number and people might start believing that that's valid. But outside of that, you know, it's like the million IOPS thing, isn't it? The $1 billion value, the three commas and all that sort of stuff. It is just a number and it doesn't really represent anything until, as you said, the company's either sold to somebody's paid you for it, or you've floated and you've raised money and there's some sort of share valuation that can give somebody an idea of what you are worth.
I think for a lot of people, it's hard to get your head around the idea of $1 billion. $1 billion is a lot of money, folks. And there's probably household names, companies, which aren't worth that sort of money. So if you look at some of these company names, companies which you may never have heard of, who are now sitting at $1 billion valuation, and they're considered to be more valuable probably than some household name companies.
And I think that's probably the interesting piece, isn't it? So let's just pick on a few here. You know, as we just said, Datrium, yeah, you could be worth that much. Do we really think Vast Data could be worth that much yet? I mean, yes, they've raised a lot of money, but it seems to me they're shipping product all the time, but I haven't seen any actual figures about revenue. Now, I don't want to get into trouble with Jeff and have him send the boys around to beat us up or anything, but or even, and by the boys, I mean Howard, of course. but at the end of the day, they just can't be getting that level of revenue in to be a $1 billion company, and there certainly can't be that amount of income to make them a profitable company. And I think that's what I always find a bit difficult to understand on these lists. You just mentioned household names there, Martin. Clearly, yeah. Most household names, not everybody, but most household names would expect to be profitable, or at least break even, not be continuously making a loss. But these companies are continuously loss-making, typically at this point.
That's the weird thing about IT, Chris, and cloud companies, storage companies, that the valuations often seem to pay no reflection on actually how much money they're making. So you're always in, certainly at this early stage, you're investing in potential, which I can see it's a valid thing to do. But there's companies on this list who have been around for quite some time. They're privately held companies, so we don't necessarily know how profitable they are or they aren't. For a lot of these companies, you know that the actual strategy is to build a company to be sold. Not very many of these companies really are designed to exist for 20 years in the form that they are.
That's a great point. And that was a good point, a good introduction to what I was going to mention next. And that's, where do they go from this $1 billion valuation? So I'm looking at that list and I can see Veritas is private equity, Barracuda private equity. The others are basically still private in one form or another. But clearly private equity companies, they must be private equity as well now. I think that got acquired by a private equity company. So we could put a valuation on that because we've sort of got an idea about how much it was paid for Veeam. So that's true. Whether there was any announcement about how much Veritas and Barracuda went for when they went to private equity, I don't know. But clearly those companies must have put a valuation on what they think those companies are worth because they went and bought them. It wasn't like they were just invested in, they were actually purchased. So they must have decided that they've got a value. So within the calculation that there's at least three there that somebody knows what they think they're worth because they paid for it. But where do you go next? So if you are, for example, Infinidat or Druva or Cohesity, are you hoping to get acquired? Because floating on the market these days, I would say, is super risky, simply just because standalone companies that are selling into this market still, I think, have a challenge. So, you know, is it acquisition? Is it really going to go down the route of acquisition? Or do you think you can be standalone? What do you reckon?
I think for most companies, the exit has to be acquisition. We can look at who's successfully IPO'd in the past 5 or 6 years. Pure, certainly, they IPO'd. It's been relatively successful. But how many other companies can we just think off the top of our head who've actually floated and made a big success out of this, who've not then end up being picked up? I mean, for instance, we had Nimble who did float and then got picked up by HPE.
Yeah, but if you look at that, they went from, I think, and I haven't prepped this at all, so I don't know, but I'm trying to do it from memory. I seem to remember their share price went up to about $32, and then it dropped to about $8, and then HP stepped in. So you could look at it and say that they weren't making money, they hadn't really made a profit, and their share price died because of it. Mm. It really took a dive, and HP just saw an opportunity rather than it being some sort of strategic purchase. Well, look, it was sort of strategic from HP's perspective.
Yeah.
Because they saw some asset in there. So it just seems like a difficult scenario to see how some of these companies will be acquired. Datrium clearly was bought for one particular piece.
Yeah.
The DR side of things, and I think we'll see the rest of it disappear. But, you know, some of the others, Rubrik and Cohesity seem to be directly competitive. Druva might be directly competitive against Clumio, but they're not on this list yet. But if they were, they might be directly competitive against them. Both of those are potentially competitive against Veeam, which slightly different market. So it's not like you wouldn't have plenty of choice if you were an acquirer in this market. You'd have lots of choice, in fact.
There's replication or sort of duplication. I mean, you've got we've got Cumulo and we've got Vast on this list, arguably very similar in many ways.
Yep.
Yeah, which isn't a problem. I mean, I'd expect to see duplication, but certainly I think where we see the most duplication is in data protection and secondary data management, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Did it surprise you to not see companies like Weka, Cloudian, Scality?
Yeah, it does. So certainly Scality surprises me. Scality has sort of been around for such a long time.
Yeah.
I would have thought to see them on the list. They're privately owned. Yeah, I definitely would have expected to see Scality, however you want to call it.
Yeah, the good thing about IT names is that you can pronounce them any way you like, because most of them aren't real. They're not real words.
But I think I've heard Jerome pronounce it Scality, so we should probably call it Scality. Yeah.
That's because he's French.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was really surprised not to see those on this list, because they seem to be some of the most obvious large storage companies that have been around for a long time that potentially you'd think were owning some of this market. Now, to look down that list and see DDN is probably the only object storage company. Is that the only one on there? Vast, perhaps? They call it unstructured, don't they, more than anything?
I was going to say, but DDN's not a traditional object storage company. I mean, they built arrays, filers. In many ways, they're a one-stop shop for storage arrays, storage devices, with the exception of backup, really. So, I mean, DDN obviously have a long heritage. They've been around for a long time. And I know that at one point IBM did look quite seriously at acquiring them. But I know the price tag back when they looked back must have been about probably nearly 10 years ago now. I know the price tag was way too high and IBM just walked away from it.
Yeah.
So it has happened. I mean, so certainly these companies have been, and every company has a price.
Definitely. And the other thing I'd say about DDN is, I was at the end of this year or earlier this year or whenever it was, we talked about a whole load of acquisitions that had happened in the industry. And DDN did pick up a range of different products, didn't they? They picked up the old Tintree stuff.
They did.
They picked up IntelliFlash from Western Digital, who got rid of that business. So they've gained a number of different additional products. So obviously they've increased their market position. But another one, is it StoreCentric? That's got the technology from Nexon and I think a couple of others. They're not on this list.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting when you look at these sort of lists. I look at it and think it's a bit like the lists that come out of people who are apparently influencers or social media gurus in certain things. And you see something like that where somebody's name gets on that list and all of a sudden they're on that list all the time. And you think, why are they on that list? And it makes you wonder how many times people are just looking at other people's lists and thinking, oh, yeah, I'm going to make my own list up and I better have a starting point to make a list from. Off we go. And now you've got a list.
Yeah.
And I just wonder whether these names are more names that we hear more of in the industry than necessarily the ones that are actually, you know, the biggest and most likely to be successful. Give you an example. We were also talking before this call about Exagrid, and Exagrid was one of those companies you said, you know, you don't hear very much in the market of, but clearly Dell now sees them as a competitor and is looking to sort of put them up against, I guess, Data Domain in their portfolio.
Yeah. It's probably good for these companies to get on some of these lists. So their marketing, their corporate comms, their PR companies are probably working quite hard to get them on their list. because it those lists do end up in stories. People look at them, and there will be a company now thinking, "Oh, I've got no idea who they are." And then you'll go and have a look, and then maybe you might find something which is interesting. So, yeah, I think there's quite a lot of marketing in this getting yourselves called a unicorn.
Yeah, definitely. And in fact, I'm trying to think who it was now. Again, lots of prep for this conversation. I know we did do prep, but one that just came to mind is, I don't know whether you saw, Chris tweeted something about one particular vendor that got missed off Enrico's recent GigaOm report. And this particular company was saying, well, we tick all the boxes of being that, you know, that particular category. Why weren't we included? Now, obviously, if you're a Gartner or if you're IDC or whatever, and those companies are building their lists from vendors they see out in the market, they do have criteria which they apply. And maybe it's number of customers, amount of turnover, and so on. Strikes me that that seems much more of a more realistic number or way of measuring some company than simply to say we've got an alleged evaluation of over $1 billion, because it much more represents something where that company has actually built a product people want. They've got a delivery mechanism, they've got that product in the market, and they've got people potentially buying it or at least trying it. And that seems to me to be a better way to put people into these sort of categories.
Yeah, I agree. But we've always taken all kinds of lists of a big pinch of salt, Chris.
Mm.
From Gartner, IDC, all the figures, we look at them and we think, really? So we're quite cynical about these lists, I will say. And maybe we're overly cynical about some of them.
Possibly. I would say that comes from a number of different things. I would say, first of all, we are British. You know, there's a natural cynicism in being British. We're not super excited about everything, every single thing that we ever see or hear about.
Yeah.
But secondly, I think we talk to a lot of companies, we look at their technology, and we've been in the industry long enough to look at something and go, that's interesting. And something else and look at it and go, that's not, or that's not going to work, or that is going to work. And I wouldn't say that we are in any way sages of the industry, but we can certainly give you an idea or people an idea of what we think has got value and what hasn't. So I don't think we're unreasonable in our assumptions when we look at lists like this and think, oh, well, that doesn't seem to make sense. But maybe the whole point is there, you know, they are subjective, they are lists, they are people's opinion, and they're there to be shot down just like any other.
Yeah, there's definitely opinion in there. But as we say, the whole funding is based around opinion at the moment. I don't think there's a huge amount of science to it. And you're right, we'll look at companies, and we're old enough to know that the best technology often doesn't win. So we may look at a company and think, well, that's a really interesting technology, but we will look at their marketing and think, well, they're never going to go anywhere, or it's too soon. What they need to do is they need to dial themselves down and just keep developing the technology. They don't need the market presence I think they do at the moment, because it's too soon for them to ship. And then there are companies, we look at them and we'll think, you know what, it's not the greatest, it's not earth-shattering, it's not going to change the world. But you look at their marketing and you'll think, they're going to do really well. They're really smart. They've got a brand. They've built a brand. And I think this is the interesting thing about the list which we're talking about. For some of them, I don't see there's a big brand.
Mm-hmm. And do you want to give an example?
Well, anybody who finds themselves with a name which is difficult to say, but I don't think that's a really great place to be. But things like, I mean, Actifio. So I'm all to Actifio. I'm aware of them. I'm a storage geek. I've looked at them. I don't know very many people outside of those people who are storage aficionados who will have any idea who they are. Anybody who deals with general infrastructure, how many of these have actually burst outside of a silo of storage into a more generalized infrastructure awareness, which is really important now? It's working out how you become relevant within a private cloud, on-premises IT, because on-premises IT is still very important. Some of these companies may do very well or try and push themselves into AWS and Azure and GCP. That's always a big risk, for certainly for infrastructure companies, to focus on any of the big public clouds. At times, it feels a bit like Microsoft used to be in the 90s, when a third party would build their business around something which a feature which Microsoft didn't yet have, and then Microsoft would release a new updated operating system which is built in and take that company completely out. Well, Amazon seem to do that on a fairly regular basis to companies who may be supplying infrastructure services on top of AWS.
Absolutely. One other angle, and we'll come back to that in a second, but one other angle I just wanted to raise before we move on is just that whole approach about how you build a company these days. So I'm looking at that list thinking Veeam, Rubrik, Cohesity, perhaps. They've spent a lot of time going out and basically, that sounds awful, doesn't it? But you know, at least Rubrik and Veeam, great parties at events, you know, very much getting a mindset of getting everybody to a party, get their name out there, get everybody knowing them. And from Veeam's perspective, you know, they talk about having hundreds of thousands of customers that clearly don't spend a massive amount individually, but they do have hundreds of thousands of customers. And that's been their approach to come from that SMB and work up. I think Rubrik tried to do the same and, you know, be the who can have the biggest party at VMware, a VMworld type scenario. They've done the same thing. And that's, you know, been their approach to basically raise as much money as possible, get out there and just make sure everybody knows who you are. Cohesity, for example, had a big bus or a truck that they were driving around and doing road shows with. So I think a lot of them are doing, have gone to that method of saying, let's just get out there and build ourselves to be as big as possible. And I wonder whether that really is going to be relevant going forward if you're not having either some cloud partnership or some way to integrate with public cloud that brings a bit more of the technology to a wider audience, like you just said.
Yeah, I was going to throw something else in on that one. I mean, yeah, Veeam, Cohesity, yep, Rubrik, certainly quite famous for their events at things like VMworld and things like that. What do we do this year?
Yeah, absolutely. What are we going to do? That is a very good point. Who knows? I mean, to be honest, I've seen the emails for VMworld and they've gone out already, obviously, it being a virtual event. I don't know how many people will attend to the same degree and how many people would have picked up on names of companies because they were at big events, because the parties were sponsored or the band was sponsored or something like that. And if we stop seeing the big events, that method of getting your name out might become a bit trickier. And I think then you really have to go back to basics a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think anybody buys anything because of a party, but I do think brand awareness is important. And if you're an IT manager or just somebody working in IT, and you've been to one of these parties and the name comes up and seems, oh, we're thinking about looking at so-and-so, at least you know they exist. It's not a complete shock or it's not an unknown. So it's not been a bad approach, I think, for people like Veeam. Veeam parties at VMworld were well-known, were renowned, and a big green monster. I mean, the cup. So that was very interesting. They always had a very strong brand based around color.
Yeah. So when we look down these companies, Martin, obviously one thing we can highlight, because we've known quite a lot of them for a while, that some have been out there for a while, like DDN or Acronis perhaps, or Actifio. Others are definitely newer. Nasuni must be about 10 years old. But Veritas is an example. Gosh, Veritas is ancient in some respects.
Well, Veritas was Veritas and was the go-to clustering technology. Obviously, it also had the go-to volume manager, logical volume manager. That's probably where most of those people who are of our age will have heard of Veritas. Then the Veritas Net Backup. Then they were acquired by Symantec, which always seemed to be a bit of a weird acquisition for them because Symantec were very much a consumer security antivirus company. From my point, well, certainly that's what I'd always seen them as and always did see them. And I think Veritas's brand got very diluted. And now it's been spun back out again as Veritas Technologies. Again, into an environment where I would suggest a lot of the stuff which they had from a technology point of view has been superseded or open sourced. That's an interesting valuation for them. It forms to be worth over $1 billion. It's interesting to think, where is the exit for them? Do they get acquired again? Because I don't see there's a great appetite for these third-party add-ons into operating systems as such, and that's what Veritas is. And NetBackup, NetBackup's great, but people are trying to change how they do data protection, how they would use it. You almost think, well, okay, perhaps we'll see a merger between themselves and something like Rubrik or Cohesity. They bring that enterprise legacy and allows the companies to become much more enterprise, or at least enterprise IT managers will be comfortable dealing with them.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, as you said, you look at the history of the products that they had and how many of them are fairly irrelevant nowadays. You know, I don't think there's a single operating system that doesn't have a native logical volume manager built into it that can't do pretty much as much as the Veritas solution did when it was out there. but we don't need physical servers anymore. We don't need the clustering technology that was built into that because we've pushed so much of that feature set into the hypervisor and into storage one way or another. So quite a lot of those features are just not relevant anymore and will become even less relevant because we're moving it to a containerized world for some applications where it has zero relevance. The net backup one is interesting because obviously they had the historic traditional net backup and they've gone down the route of trying to build out a cloud-based solution too. So they've now got two parallel technologies which don't seem to be interacting. It's a bit of a similar way to the way IBM did it with Spectrum Protect and Spectrum Protect Plus, where they're like literally two separate products. So now you're almost like trying to hit both markets without having a technique to overlap between the old and the new. I wonder though whether with companies like Veritas, whether they'll end up similar to the way that DDN, StoreCentric have gone, and they'll start buying up assets, or maybe they intend to buy up assets and build out bigger portfolio companies that have got more to offer than just one product line. Because it's clear that just selling one product line just isn't enough in this market. You're going to get outdone by people. And to a certain degree, maybe it never was. You know, you look at EMC or any of the traditional infrastructure vendors, it was all about solutions and portfolio of solutions you could sell. So I wonder whether with a lot of these companies, the only direction forward is to become part of a bigger portfolio or to be acquired in one way or another.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's where we're shifting now. I think portfolio is the way to go for most of these companies to become part of a greater whole. So actually, yeah, again, it pushes back to acquisition. The problem is, although the companies who are the portfolio IT companies of now, a lot of them, their portfolio is very busy already. Do they need another integration point? Do they need another company to integrate into their existing structure? Obviously, VMware have just been acquisitive. I think VMware will continue to be acquisitive as they try and strengthen and build out the VMware platform. I think that's a very defensive move in many ways against the public cloud providers. But they need to make sure they've got those features. I'm not sure how many developers they have. And so when they're going against Amazon, who seem to have developers coming out of their ears, it's very tough for them.
I'll wrap us up on one last topic then.
Yeah.
And that's whether I think that, or whether we think that the idea of storage unicorns, it could be classed as any unicorn, I suppose, any particular technology, but probably storage in this instance, whether this is something we're likely to see more of or less of. And I'll explain the reason why I say that. And that's as we see more and more technology becoming more and more abstracted from us to a certain degree with the use of cloud and hybrid and so on, and with existing vendors wanting to move away from selling us a physical product and selling to us as a service, especially with storage, the requirement to understand the detail of what that particular platform does is reducing more and more. So let's look at, say, data protection, for instance. It's pretty much clear data protection as a service in the public cloud with some way to deal with on-premises is probably the best way to go, without a doubt. So coming out into this market today with a new standalone on-premises only backup solution is like probably never going to get you anywhere. But some of these others, I think, are going to have similar issues. So Cumulo, where are they going to go? Because, you know, as a platform, they seem to be doing really well, but they are just a scale-out file platform. And, you know, we've got many of those. Remember, this list is only the ones we're classing as unicorns who are effectively private. This list isn't a representation of the entire market. So somehow these companies have got to fit in somewhere. And I think as we're moving more to hybrid and cloud type worlds, it might be more and more difficult for us to see any of these companies become big companies in the future. And it might be very hard for us to even envisage any of them existing in the future as unicorns, just simply because of the way the market's going.
Mm. Yeah.
No, I'm not saying we're looking at the last list of unicorns, because nobody wants to say that, you know, we'll never see something again, because, you know, we know the industry goes around in circles. But I do think it will be increasingly difficult to be a standalone company purely on one platform like storage, building something that doesn't fit into something else of a wider portfolio and still try to get to $1 billion valuation or more than that. I just think it's going to be really, really hard.
Yeah, I agree. It is hard. So that means that the exit for startups, because we do need a steady number of startups coming through with new ideas, you're not going to be able to build, well, we don't think you'll be able to build another pure storage company, but Actually, funny enough, Pure Storage did, and I don't think we ever expected that they, but I don't think we expected that they would. I mean, I think we thought NetApp might be the last standalone storage company who did very little else. That's a bit unfair on them, but they do focus on storage. That's what they are. They are a storage company. Then Pure Storage had come along. So do we see any of these companies coming through and breaking out in a way that Pure have done? Or do they just become a technology which is acquired and integrated into the whole? I can't see another massive infrastructure company coming out. Certainly you don't see another EMC, you don't see or do we? Do one of the Chinese companies finally break out in a big, big way with a end-to-end infrastructure portfolio?
Now that's something that, you know, this list doesn't in any way give us a view on. And that's, we're very, very Western focused. We're very focused on American companies typically. We tend to look at that as our sort of direction, but you're right. There are many companies in China with large portfolios of products. And in fact, I was looking at something yesterday related to OpenSDS, which is now rebranded to something called Soda. Yeah. And if you look at that, almost everybody involved in that seems to be from one of the Chinese manufacturers, like a Fujitsu or a Huawei or something like that.
Yeah,
it's very easy to exclude that part of the market simply because they're not as easy to engage with as the Western companies are. And perhaps there's a language barrier, perhaps there's a translation barrier in terms of the way that websites are built and written. So you're right, we are very easily pigeonholing ourselves into companies that we believe are the ones that are on these sort of lists simply because they're the ones we find easy to talk to and easy to access. But there are other companies out there who could easily be bigger than this.
Yeah, and there are some very notable exceptions from that list. But things, companies which you'd expect to see, which I would expect to see with billion-dollar unicorn-type valuations. Mm. I was very surprised not to see something like Wasabi on the list.
Yes, true. Yeah, and I can't imagine that Backblaze isn't a reasonably large company these days. And bearing in mind, when you're talking about valuation, this is based on the amount of money invested in the company to produce a valuation. Again, it goes back to discussion at the very beginning. How on earth can you rely on money invested as an evaluation of what somebody is worth? It's a false measure that really doesn't give you a good understanding of that. And it would be good to see a bit more transparency around how things like some of the numbers are calculated and how people work it out, so we could really get to the bottom of understanding how much of this becomes hype, because let's face it, we use the term unicorn. How much of this is hype and how much of it is reality that an end user can look at it and go, for sake of argument, Infinidat, can I trust that they're going to be a solid company in 10 years' time, in 5 years' time? Or any of those on that list, what's going to happen to them? I mean, if you've been a Datrium customer, I don't know what's going to happen with all the existing Datrium customers. Somebody asked me that question, by the way, that they'd literally just bought the Datrium technology. And they were like, well, what happens now? Because we bought the hardware and VMware doesn't sell hardware. So, no. Or doesn't support hardware. What happens to us? So, you know, I think rather than worrying about companies being big because they've got a big valuation, I'd like to see something a bit more tangible I could look at and say, these are big and relevant because they've got, well, it's Gartner thing, isn't it? Ability to execute and a vision of what the future is. So you can sort of see where, you know, that's more useful, I think. But we need the transparency around it. Maybe we should start our own list. Maybe we should start our own list of unicorns that we think are likely to be big in the market. And likely be successful, but not base it on the amount of money they've had invested in them, but base it on some bit more constructive measurement of what we think that the company is worth. Maybe we'd come out with a different list.
Yeah, it would be interesting whether it actually has that real valuation or not. But those companies who we think have technology which is worth $1 billion, which is a very different thing to as companies which are worth $1 billion.
Yes, absolutely. And on that note, we should perhaps just hang on there and say, well, let's just call it quits on this discussion and maybe go away, think of a list, come back and maybe decide whether we want to tell people what we think our list is going to be.
Yeah, we could do. That would be an interesting discussion, wouldn't it?
Definitely.
We should get Mr. Meller on that one, though.
Oh, yes. I'm sure he'd be very, very interested in telling us what he thinks.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Well, for now, Martin, thank you again, as usual. Really, I think that's hopefully gives people pause for thought to go out and look at and see what they think about these types of valuations. And let's see if we can get Chris on to discuss the next step of that discussion.
Cool.
All right. Cheers, Martin.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.